Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and welcome also to our last ever episode of this podcast. It's really weird to say that out loud, and there's a part of me that really wants to caveat it of like, maybe we'll come back, maybe I'll meet someone and I'll really be dying to interview them and I'll just drop a random one in the feed. And it may happen, but for now, as I was discussing with my guest off air, this is feeling like a complete project. And I can't say that for everything in my life, particularly things I'm involved in creatively. So it feels really nice to get to chat to a wonderful guest I've got to interview before. It feels nice to be going into a bit of a new era in my life of potential other podcasting opportunities. And also, I don't think I've mentioned it on this show, but I have on Mental, where I recently interviewed our guest, that I am training to be a psychotherapist. And that is not related to the decision to wrap up the show, because this has been planned for a while. However, slowing down in podcasting is partly informed by that. So yeah, a lot of big changes. And talking of life changes, our guest this week is recently married. So we'll be getting into that in a moment. She's a British Afghan poet, entrepreneur, and author of 6 books. I had to check. It's so many. I didn't want to miss any. Please welcome Ruby Dahl.
Boo! Hello! Hi, it's so good to be back. I mean, on a different podcast, but still so good to be back speaking to you.
I know. I do love that because I, for a long time, only had Mental, and now having both shows, it is kind of fun to be a bit of a different version of myself on both. And, you know, I actually, it's one of my favorite things when I get to interview people on both. I'm like, okay, now we've covered everything because these are my 2 main topics. So, yeah. Although I was saying to you that I might be starting a poetry podcast in the future. So maybe you'll get a third interview out of me.
You know what? I would love that. I've got 2 poetry books out. I would love to recite from poetry to you. I've got actually some really nice, like, they're not poetry, but like lyrical pieces of prose in my next book. And I was actually listening to the audiobook today, Bobby, and they added, like, you know, you were mentioning earlier when we were off the recording, you were saying about how trying to get a nice, like, music at the back when they're reciting the poetry. They actually added a really nice, like, soft, subtle tone at the back, which my producer composed herself. So she actually composed all the soft music for all the lyrical pieces of prose. And I was just thinking of that when you mentioned your poetry podcast. Going to be so exciting.
I love that. And you're looking over at her like, where have you been? All these performances I've done without the beautiful underscore. Yeah, no, yeah. I love that. I mean, that's half my obsession with Lana Del Rey, is like how she does all the, like, the spoken word bits in her music videos as well. Obsessed.
Yeah, me too. I love that very much.
Great stuff. So let's talk about dating. Our other love. So tell me, so let's set the scene a little bit. Before your marriage, where were you with dating? What was happening? What were the plans? What were the ambitions?
Before I even met my husband, I was, you know, I was in the Sahara desert. I was just like, the Sahara desert of love. I was done. I was like, I am not going to find anyone who is going to be able to, you know, water the dry Sahara of my heart. I was just so done. I've had the talking stages, those horrible talking stages where you feel like it's going to go somewhere, but then it doesn't get anywhere. Yeah, so I met my husband when I was, I think, 23, turning 24. Up until then, Bobby, I had never been in a relationship. That is the truth. I had never been in a relationship. Now, you know, everyone who's listening to this is probably wondering, what? How could you have never been with anyone until 24? And the reason for this is genuinely because I came from a very strict family. Like, you know, I'm a South Asian. I come from a British Afghan family. And my family, like, I had an older brother. I had older uncles, dad. I didn't grow up with a mum. So I lost my mum when I was very little. And so all these male figures in my life were very, very controlling, I'd say. You know, when I was young, they were just like, no, you're not allowed to get into a relationship. You're not. Boys, what are boys? Like, you shouldn't be speaking. Boys. And then the same was the case for my cousin. She had parents, she had mom, she had sisters, everything. But it was just one of those things where only in the last 5 or 6 years or so, it's actually become an open conversation that kids can have with their parents, like when they're younger, as teenagers, that, oh yes, you know, I want to be in a relationship. But in my time, that wasn't the case. And so I went to a girl's school as well. So that made it even worse because there were no prospects. There was literally nothing around. And then I went to uni and I was 18. I guess by that point, I went to university and I met lots of people. But by then, I think I was more on a self-discovery journey. The whole idea of getting into a relationship and finding love was all about me trying to find myself. My concept of love was very messy.
Let's pause on that for a moment, because that is a very real thing that people will default to trying to outsource. And it's like, I don't know about love. I don't know about loving me. Let's see if somebody else can figure it out.
Absolutely. I don't know about love. I don't know about loving me. And also, our concept of love is based on what we see around us. So if you haven't seen a healthy relationship, which I hadn't, if you haven't seen any healthy romantic relationship around you, or your parents or people around you, your uncles, aunts, and so on, then what do you really know about love? And so here you are, a teenager, you've got acne, you're struggling with your self-worth, you have all these friends, sometimes they're nice to you, sometimes they're mean to you. At the same time, you come across boys and you're like, oh yeah, I think I like him. And then he ends up liking your friend. And stages, right? And you're trying to figure out who you are. But with me, there was so much added baggage of like trying to heal from like so much I was experiencing that love just didn't seem like something that I felt like I would experience. And I never thought that I'd find like a healthy relationship. Cut to, you know, I'm 21. And
there's so much storyteller. There's so much in all of this. We were talking off air about how many haven't even been published. God knows how many you've actually written. But yeah, I think there's really something in that that we, you know, with time can forget. Like the pure chaos that is our teenage years when it comes to love. And like we keep having these kind of, I describe it as like stepping stones where you get into a new relationship or you have a new crush even, and you're convinced. You're like, well, this is love. Now I know. Now I'm an adult. Now I've seen the truth. This is the love I've been looking for. And then you look back at that time, every time it happens again, and you're like, no, no, this time, this one is it.
Absolutely.
You know, and then I don't know if you have this, having not dated when you were younger, but as someone that did plenty, I look at, you know, younger people now and I have this kind of mentality, particularly people I work with. I kind of see them like go in and out of relationships and have drama. And I'm like, you should just all be having great relationships. You're all so young, you know. Great personalities, like Gen Z are so knowledgeable about everything. You must have plenty of chat. But, you know, we can forget some of the angst that comes with all of that time.
And I think we forget that, like, teenagehood for any generation is still teenagehood, right? So they still go through the same emotions, the experiences that you have, they're very similar. The hormonal changes, like a lot of what's happening happens to every single generation when they're in that adolescent stage. And yeah, like I haven't dated much, but of course I've liked people. Like growing up, you have a crush, as you said, like you like someone, you're like, oh yeah, this one is real. And I've never felt like this about anyone before. And then a couple of months later, you're like, this is the one. I remember I think the first time I ever had a crush, a really, really strong, deep-seated crush. I was, I think, in year 9, okay? I'm a South Asian girl, okay? So we have a little bit of like hair, like we have lots of hair. So I used to have lots of facial hair. Okay, you can't see it anymore, but I had like, you know, a stash, I had sideburns, I hadn't gotten my eyebrows done. I was a pretty hairy kid, and it's something I'm very proud of now, but when you're a teenager, it's something you're made to feel very bad about, and especially, you know, we're talking 10, 15 years ago, it was all looked down upon, you know, like our differences were picked on a lot more than they are now, I guess, for kids.
Oh, yeah. I have a friend that's a model with a unibrow, and that's hugely celebrated. Like,
yeah, exactly. And it's amazing. But if you had a unibrow back then, that would be like, you would be the butt of all jokes. And that was literally me. Anyway, so I'm having all these, like, you know, self-esteem issues, and I'm not confident in my skin, and I've never had my arms waxed or my legs waxed, and I have a crush on this boy who goes to a different school, super crazy crush. And that's when like MSN and Bieber and everything came about, so you could start, you know, speaking to people. And that's how a girl who goes to an only girl school is able to talk to like boys. Anyway, really like this boy, and it turned out that he wanted to talk to me so he could get to my friend who was so pretty. She had straightened hair, she had her eyebrows. And so, like, you know, like...
I knew what you referenced earlier about the, like, your friend came from a real place.
Exactly. So, you know, she was like this beautiful young teenager, and I'm struggling with, you know, everything that's going on with me. And then this boy who I'm so crazy about is crazy about her. And I was just like, yeah, my life's over. I was like, I'm just, you know, my life is over. That was my one chance. I'm never going to be able to feel this way about someone again. And then obviously that passed and they didn't work out. But eventually, like, you know, every time.
You have to get that in there. Didn't even work out for her.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
But yeah, like every time it wouldn't work out, you would feel really bad. Like you would feel really, really, you know, like, why? What is it about me that's not great and so on? And so, yeah, it's one of those things where when you're growing up as a teenager and then you've got all these restrictions of not talking to boys and not doing this, and then you're also struggling with your self-esteem, and then you don't get into any relationships where everyone else around you is sneaking behind their parents' back, essentially. Like, it wasn't like people weren't doing it. Like, everybody was sneaking around. But I was just too scared to. And so I am, like, observing all these relationships and people getting in and out of relationships. I'm trying to figure out how to love myself. I'm figuring out, like, what does love even mean? And then, yeah, and then when I was in my early 20s, I was very drawn to toxic men. Like, I was very, very drawn to, like, this toxic idea of what love meant, which was if they make you chase them, then they're the one.
Emotionally unavailable. Yep.
Unavailable.
But no, it's true, and it's such a strange kind of contrast, you know, for you culturally there, that there's so much kind of expectation around getting married one day, and yet the path to that is very unclear.
Really?
Your husband just has to land in your lap. No other man can look at you before then, you know?
Oh my God, the amount of, like, brown girls that I could bring in this chat right now where literally had this line, okay? Up until 21, like, up until you graduate, you're not allowed to even look at a boy. 21, where's your man? Supposed to marry? And I'm like, how was I supposed to just, like, conjure them out of thin air? I had to date. I had to meet people, which you didn't let me do. Oh my God, South Asian parents. I can't do it.
And then there's the additional piece of, like, of course you were going for whoever at that point. It's like, well, people are tapping their watches, so I guess I'm just going to chase whoever, you know?
You're on a timeline. You're like, I need to find someone quick. And then you're talking to all these, like, you know, people who are just unemotionally available, or they're just, Bobby, they just, they show you a reflection of what's not good in, like, a relationship, essentially. So for me, like, without, you know, getting too deep about it, I always associated love with pain, because that's all I had ever known about love. And so before my husband, I went through, like, a really, really big heartbreak over a friend. Okay, we were never in a relationship, but I had a heartbreak because I was friends with this person for so many years, but only when they rejected me, like, only when they said, no, we can't be together, that's when I felt love. And that's not what love isn't rejection. And so it took me a long time to understand that. And I was only able to understand that when I learned what healthy love is, what it means to truly be in a good relationship. And so I feel like I wasted a lot of my early 20s chasing the kind of relationships that were not ever meant for me. And they would have inevitably broken up anyway. And so I'm really lucky that I found my husband when I did, because he was a reflection of everything that I had not decided to go for, essentially. I would go for emotionally unavailable men who were stringing you along, love bombing you, and then disappearing, you know, like that kind of situation. Or men who would just, they would tell you that you're their friend, but then they would not act like a friend. Like, they would treat you a lot more. And I think a lot of girls can relate to this, where it's like when you're talking to someone for a really long time and they treat you like they would someone that they're dating without the dating part of it. And often it just gets so confusing, because for people like me who have a messy concept of love and who think that love is struggle and love is waiting and love is, you know, pain, you think, yeah, this is going to eventually lead to a relationship. And it didn't. And then when I met my husband, he was completely different to that. He was straight up. He was honest. And he was, from the moment that he spoke to me, I want to be in a relationship with you. Like, he was like, yeah, let's get to know each other. If it turns into a relationship, great. But I want to date you. I want to take you out on a date. I want to get to know you in that way. Instead of, you know, we're friends and let's be friends, but let's meet, but let's talk every day on the phone. Have you ever experienced that where it's just like, we're friends, but are we really? Like, the line is not really there.
Oh.
It's just blur.
Constantly. And I've been very guilty of also being the one that's blurring the lines. I have a avoidant attachment style, I think is my way of explaining this. And so a great hack, if you have an avoidant attachment style, is you go after other people that are avoidant. And then unconsciously, you know, consciously you get to feel like you're really chasing them. And unconsciously you're staying really safe because it's never going to work out because you're both running in circles away from each other.
Wow.
So yeah. That's my self-diagnosis.
And I like that you're self-aware.
See, I mean, that I found that part easier. You know, changing your patterns is very much a kind of work in progress. And I think the reassuring thing is getting good at relationships is lifelong. On one hand, that's a lot of work and that can be quite daunting. But on the other hand, I'm sure you'll attest to, you get married and you tick that kind of box that is so lauded. It doesn't mean you know how to have a perfect relationship yet either.
No, even when we were dating, I mean, I, believe it, apparently got married very late, according to my community timeline.
Yeah,
so
I would believe it.
I got married when I was 28, when I got married. A lot of the girls that I knew from when I was younger had already been married for years. They had babies. It was just crazy, you know? Like, when I got married, I was probably the last person from my generation in my community. Probably the last.
No, but that is how, like, how you're made to feel, you know, with other people's timelines or your relationships.
Absolutely. But then when I look back at it, firstly, like, other people's timeline is not my timeline. I was very content with when I got married. I was very, very happy with the progress of my relationship, of my life, essentially. These timelines are all man-made. They're curated by, you know, an oppressive culture, an oppressive way of thinking. And so we need to change that anyway.
As you were referencing earlier, we don't have to look very far to see none of that is working anyway. You know, none of the, like, the strict rules is stopping people from exploring relationships anyway. They're just doing it in secret, you know, and I think that's a difficult thing for parents to swallow, that they want to kind of rule out behavior, but by being strict, it may actually be having, if anything, the opposite effect.
Absolutely.
That you're running around taking more risks than if your parents actually knew where you were.
I agree. And I think it's so important to have healthy conversations with your kids, to have a relationship where they can come to you and talk to you about stuff. If you're that strict with your kids, either it's going to lead to them being completely, like, detached from you, so they don't talk to you, or them being rebellious. Either way, you're going to lose that healthy relationship with your child anyway. And then I guess for me, the biggest thing was that my relationship to me proved that, and I think this is very important, Bobby, that growing up, like, in a difficult childhood, or growing up in a way where you were not taught about healthy love, shouldn't determine that you're going to be in an unhealthy relationship. And I think, like, when we grow up,
because that goes both ways. You only need to watch Made in Chelsea to be like, you can have all the privilege and have horrible relationships. That's the whole plot line of that show.
Absolutely. And I think especially, like, when we describe people's attachment styles, or we describe people's ability to form healthy relationships, we always go back to the building blocks. We always say, oh, this person experienced a healthy upbringing with their healthy attachment style with their parents, so they're going to have a healthy attachment style going forward. These are just categories. It doesn't mean you stay in the category. Like, you can change the category. You can change yourself in a way where, like, you don't need to tell yourself, like, you don't need to be defined by the category that you're in. You don't need to be like, okay, because I've really struggled in forming a good relationship when I was younger, or because I've not seen a healthy relationship, I just don't have the skills to be able to ever get into one. And it's like, okay, but you can develop the skills. You can work on yourself. You can reflect and you can say, okay, this hasn't worked out in the dating situations I've been in, or in the situationships, or in my relationships. And now I can change that to actually be in a healthy one, because I was the last person to ever be in a healthy relationship because of how much, because of how much unhealthiness I had around me and inside me. And as you said earlier about getting into a relationship or getting married or whatever, it's like this big box that you've ticked. But it doesn't mean that the hard work is over. I definitely feel like getting into a relationship with someone who has like certain values and skills and experiences that are a bit different to mine, where I carried a lot of baggage and childhood trauma, and he was a little bit more stable in that sense of, yeah, like he went through his fair share of struggles because everybody does.
But is that not what we're all looking for? We're just like, I get to come as me and they need to be 10% more stable than I am, please.
Absolutely. Oh my God, it makes all the difference, Bobby. But this is me. I need to not be so toxic that I destabilize.
Like, we both need to work on being more stable. Like, I need to find that 10% in me.
And I need to not destroy your peace of mind.
Yeah.
I need to continue working with me.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And so tell me, how did you two meet?
We actually met through a friend. So I was friends with a brother and a sister. And I was talking to his friend for a while. And this friend was the friendship love bombing friend. So we were talking and this friend was literally like, they would call me every single day, talk to me every day for an hour, message me all the time. We're friends, Ruby. We're friends. And then I was just like so confused this whole time because I was just like, how? I don't get it. Like, I would sit with my girls and we would just unpick all the conversations and be like, what is going on? Like, I don't get why. Like, I get called all the time. I get messaged all the time. I get, you know, all this is happening. We haven't met. The one time we meet as friends. Okay. Other than that, we're just talking all the time. In person, no, we'd only met once as friends. And so, wow. But then all this, yeah, I know, right?
And where, did you live nearby? Like, what?
Yeah, we're in Liverpool. They weren't far. But this is what I mean. Like, you have...
This is the answer to love bombing, right? Of like, actions, not words.
Yeah.
Where was this man?
So, you have these certain toxic men, okay? Who friendship love bomb you. And either they have another motive and they do want to see you often, but still put you in the category of a friend when they meet you, you know, all that kind of stuff. Or they just friendship love bomb you and then they friendship love bomb other people at the same time. And what they're doing is they're just keeping options for themselves to see which one they want to go for. And then if you know your self-worth and if you're like, you know what, I don't deserve this. This person is a piece of, then I'm going to move on. And so I was like, you know what, I'm done with this like friendship situationship that's going on. I'm really like, I can't be asked, this person's not worth it. And then I went about my life. And then my husband actually followed me through him. So they were in a group, like they were all best friends and they're in a group setting. And I don't even know if I should say this, but they would essentially share everything. Okay. So if one of them, there's five of them, if one of them spoke to a girl and it didn't work out, then the other one, if they liked her, they'd be like, oh, can I talk to her? It didn't work out with you, but can I give it a go? And then they would just do that. That's how another one of them married their wife as well. This is all like, we're not talking physically dating and a relationship. We're talking a virtual conversationship.
Yeah.
See where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
Just like someone you've been talking to for a few months, you haven't even met up. And then you're like, you know what? There's no spark there. Not really feeling it. So, you know, like, I didn't say I love you. You didn't say, I didn't say I like you.
I get it. I'm not judging you. Like, I'm up for this referral system. If my friends could just get...
Okay, you didn't feel the spark. I think maybe me and Hal will hit it off or whatever. And that's how they did it. Anyway, so my husband had followed me. And when I decided to say goodbye to his friend, I was like, I can't be off. Like, this friend is completely... I don't like him at all because he's wasted my time. Like, if anything, he's wasted my time. I could have given that time to myself. I could have, you know, rather than just be in this little confusion. I think I'm going to. And then, yeah, my husband just messaged me and I had already heard about him. And then we just got talking and I had spoken to his friend as a friend for so long. But the moment that me and my husband spoke, it was just completely different. Like, it was like, from the moment we spoke, it was just... I don't know how to explain it, Bobby. I think it was just this sense of like, he wasn't there to play games. He wasn't there to like love bomb me. He was just like, I've heard about you from X and I've heard so many good things about you. He says you're a great friend, la la, and I want to like just talk to you and get to know you and see if it goes anywhere. And that was literally it.
It's something I've reflected on quite a bit, you know, hosting this show, that so often when I interview people that are in really happy relationships, that is a kind of through line of like, something was different about them. I can't necessarily describe them, even though I know everything about them. I can't necessarily describe what was different. And my kind of new working theory is that most people out there that are in the dating pool are not ready for a relationship. And, you know, I don't mind pointing the finger my way, much like we talked about, like the steps of, you know, each time you think you know what love is. I think there's also steps where you're like, okay, now I'm really ready. And so currently I feel really ready, but we might well find out there's an even more ready me in the future. And I think that it goes some way to explain this, that it's not that there was something necessarily kind of unrecognizable about him compared to other guys, but you were both in that kind of mature, ready place where you were going to be vulnerable. You were going to genuinely give it a shot. You weren't going to mess each other around. You maybe had similar pressures and timelines. And these kind of factors all came together to boost what was a genuine connection as opposed to foiling.
And it could have gone either way. Like before him, I had talking stages with people who were also like, yeah, let's get to know each other or whatever. And it just didn't work out because there was just no compatibility. He, for me, like he brought like practicality and friendship and stability and foundation. And I brought like the emotional side to him. And we both kind of, it was literally like a yin and yang. We kind of just complemented each other in the right way. And you all, like, I feel like the one thing with dating is the reason why up until then it never worked out with anyone is because I had no idea what I was looking for until I met him. When I met him, I was literally like, oh, I was looking for all of this, but that's not what I needed. Like, I needed you. Like, you are the person with your qualities and your personality traits and your quirks and your sassiness. Like, you are the person I need. It's true. You
know? No, the sassiness makes me laugh. I have a friend that she's Muslim and she wears a scarf, and her dynamic with her husband is so fun and really confuses everyone around her, because she'll like, her nickname for him is Dickhead. And so she'll shout across in the supermarket if she needs him. And then obviously everyone looks at her and she's always so serenely dressed and so stunning. And everyone's like, just assumes like she's had her purse stolen or something. They don't know that. She's calling over to her loving husband who's going to trot straight over.
That's hilarious.
So this is it. You need a bit of sass.
Oh my God, my husband gets on my nerves. Like, he is so annoying. He's the kind of person who literally, like, for everything that you will say, he's got a sassy response. He's like a little teenage girl. But then at the same time, he's so loving. He's so caring. He's so considerate. It's not even something that I should even praise, to be honest. But it's one of those things that's very lacking in South Asian men. And that is this ability to be there fully present in the home. In the sense of, like, when it comes to household chores, household anything. It's not a question. Men in the Western world understand that. But when it comes to South Asian families and South Asian men, men are put on this like toxic masculinity. They're put on this particular pedestal of you should not be helping out at home and you should not be cooking and cleaning and doing the normal.
Well, it would be considered feminine. It would be questioned.
Yeah, they just mother too much. And so any man not doing that and any man actually being in the house is not like, oh, bravo, you've done something amazing. It's something that's expected of them. Nevertheless, I still appreciate it because despite being brought up in this culture and despite being a part of the problem, he is not the problem going forward. Like, he is so considerate. He takes care of me so well. He knows his roles in terms of what to do for me as a husband, but he also knows that he needs to be fully present in the home when it comes to household chores, anything, whatever it is. Like, he's just, like, I would say, he's like fully equipped as a husband. He just has all the skills. And I didn't know
this is it. Because that's the place that I look forward to us getting to one day, where it's not about like male and female skills. And it's just like, what makes a good partner? You know, like my flatmate wouldn't mind me using him as an example, where to a lot of people, a selling point would be that he holds down like a management position at work and he's very good at his job.
Yeah.
Equally, I would say he's also very well house trained. He can cook, he cleans up after himself, he does endless laundry, he always empties the dishwasher before I get round to it. I'm just like, that is as much of a sell as anything to do with his finances. Like, he is useful in all arenas.
All areas. And I love that. I love that so much. And for me, like, he's obviously, you know, no one's perfect. Sometimes he gets on my nerves, but he's so good at his job. As you said, like, his head screwed on, he works hard, he does all of that, and then he comes home and then he's good at home as well. And then he's funny and sassy and adventurous. He makes me hike up like these mountains that are slippery and I might fall and die. But, you know, he's just so adventurous as well. And so he's what everything that I needed, Bobby, like to live a happy life. And slowly but steadily, like over the last 5 years, I've just been healing. You know, I've been healing from all the pain of my past. I've been healing from all the, you know, difficult experiences that I had, and I found happiness with him in a way that I never would have expected. Like, the relationship that I live with him is a dream for me. It's genuinely, like, teenage me would have never expected that I'd be able to be in a healthy, happy, loving relationship and be married to someone like this. And I always say this, like, I come with so much baggage and trauma. I'm definitely the red flag. I tried to write about it, okay? I tried to write about it and tried to get all the mugginess out of my head. But I can be a handful sometimes, and he can be too, but I can be more of a handful. But he knows how to handle it. He has figured it out. And then that makes me want to be better.
Yeah, know? And I think all of us, I am sure he has elements of this where he thinks like, oh, I'm a handful as well.
Yeah.
Each of us kind of come in with our messy selves, and it is sometimes like a shift that I rail against these days, where I'm obviously so on board with like going and getting your therapy and working on yourself and being honest about who you are in a relationship and honest about ways in which you might need to improve. But I don't ever mean that to the extent where if you don't perceive yourself as perfect, you're not allowed to be in a relationship. Because I think there's something very toxic there, where sometimes the way that I don't think people consciously do this, but I'm reminded of, so my favorite motivational speaker is Lisa Nichols. And she has this great line where she talks about how you've got to be the example to the world on how to love you. And I really believe in that. And I also think there's an opposite side of that. That if at a certain point, you not addressing these things in yourself is actually a liability. And that's not in a shame on you sort of a way. That's in a, there's some stuff to address there, because the alternative is if we don't believe ourselves to be capable of being in a healthy relationship, if we don't think we are worthy or we're lovable enough for someone to really care about us, we settle for all kinds of horrible situations. And we often, when we're really honest with ourselves, lean into them, whether that's making bad choices or whether that's maybe you are the fuckboy. Maybe you are the one that's like blowing hot and cold. Maybe you're love bombing because there's some kind of disparity there between really wanting a great relationship, but not really feeling like you belong in one.
I agree with you so much, especially when you said where there's something wrong with the quote, until we're not perfect, we shouldn't be in a relationship, there's something wrong with that idea. And I literally dedicate an entire chapter to this in exact topic, Bobby, in the path to self-love. It's the relationships topic, and it's literally me going against this idea that, like, in today's day and age, we've become so focused on, I need to find myself before I get into a relationship. I need to love myself completely, quotation marks, before I get into a relationship. I need to be, you know, like completely content with who I am. Until I don't love me, quotation, I can't love you, quotation. And the end point is that self-love is a journey. Okay, so you can't get to that point where you're like, I love myself completely and I'm ready to be in a relationship. No, you're going to continue growing when you're in a relationship. You're going to continue healing. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. Now, if you were to compare a romantic relationship to the relationship that you have with your friends and your family, when you have a bad day, or you have, say, you have an outbreak and, you know, you explode at your friends, family, whatever it is, because you're going through something really difficult, you don't suddenly say, oh, I need to break up with my mom because I'm not a good son or daughter, or I need to break up with my friend because, you know, I've just had an outburst. So why do we think that we're not good enough for a romantic relationship because we're going through something? Why do we think that just because you're having a bad day, suddenly you need to get out of this relationship and work on yourself and then get back into the relationship? Yes, there are moments where you can be the one that's toxic, I guess, or your trauma can, you know, be projected on them in some way. I get that. I do get that. But those are really extreme cases. You know, those are cases where you haven't done at least a little bit of the work, or half of the work, or 70% of the work that needs to be done in order for you to feel at peace and at ease with yourself. But most of the time, when we're in relationships, we are healing. Like, we heal for the rest of our lives. There's baggage we need to, you know, lift off. There's trauma that we need to unpick. There's so much we need to do. And if we're having a bad day or a bad week, it doesn't negate that we still deserve love. We do. We deserve the love of our parents. We deserve the love of our friends. And we deserve the love of the partner that we're in. All we can really do in moments like that, when we are having one of those days or one of those weeks where we are lashing out at everyone and just not in our bed's best space, is to reach out to our safe space, to our support circle, which includes our romantic partner, and tell them, hey, listen, I'm going through this, and like, this is what's where my head's at, essentially. And I think these days we're so focused on becoming independent that people have become hyper independent, and they think that, you know, I just need to be by myself and work on myself alone, because being in a relationship, A, I don't want to project that on them, or B, I don't want them to take my independence and my self-love journey away. Yeah. That's what I see.
No, agreed. And then what is it all for? Like, if we're working on ourselves to be like super independent and not connect with people, like, is that not the point? Like, having stronger connections, really caring about people and them caring about us, you know, that's, to me, that's so much of it. And I would add there that there's something that can feel so far away about self-love. It can feel so intangible when it's not your experience. So for me, it was, how can I hate myself less? How can I get more neutral to myself? How can I take some of the baggage of how much I care about things or despise things about myself? And then you can start sort of drifting into self-love. You can start actually noticing the things that you might like and focusing more on them, you know. And of course, you've got a whole book about how to do these things. But, you know, I totally agree that the right relationship, you know, because there's definitely ones that can give us more baggage. But, you know, the right kind of healthy love, that is, I've heard somebody describe it before as like, it's like a vault that you have access to, that when you're lacking a bit of the self-love that day, that person's got some love for you to spare. And they can affirm that, no, you're just having a bad day. I don't hate you now. That's just your brain playing tricks on you.
I agree. And when I was writing this book, because self-love, we talk so much about like me. For me, it was so important to bring in relationships, romantic relationship, the relationship with your friends and your family. Relationships are a huge part to loving yourself. And my romantic relationship is, and I've said it in the book as well, the biggest blessing that I've received on my self-love and healing journey. It's one of those, as you said, a vault. It's the golden key, essentially, for me, which I have used to unlock so many doors. The door to me being more successful in my career, the door to me having more self-confidence, higher self-esteem. It's not like my husband sat me down and said, okay, this is how you're going to be confident, this is how you're going to achieve it. No, it's just through the experiences that we had, through the conversations, through me just observing him, and through me learning to love myself more and more as we like made progress in our relationship, that just kind of fueled and energized me to make the changes that I needed to in all the other areas of my life. So a short example is like the book's releasing. Okay, the book's releasing on the 11th of June or 13th of June. And I'm so nervous. I'm so stressed out. Okay, we had a few setbacks in terms of this launch we wanted to do. We weren't able to do it because of a few issues. And I just sat there and I was just like, I just don't deserve anything. Like, I feel so unworthy. I feel like I'm not good enough. I feel like everything's coming crashing down and I don't know what to do. And he just sat with me and he was just like, you're fine. You're fine. Everything's fine, in the sense that, you know, your book's releasing. It's so wonderful. There's something so amazing happening in your life. And it's just your mind telling you that you're not worthy. It's all stress. And he goes, no matter what the outcome is with whatever happens, I'm proud of you and you should be proud of you too. And just hearing that just calmed me down, you know?
It's someone you trust the opinion of, times when you can't quite trust your own mind.
Yeah, like I feel like it's just when you feel like everything's coming crashing down around you, having that safe space, whether it's your romantic partner, whether it's your parents, whether it's your close friends, whoever it is who's in that safe space, you can just, you know, switch into them and just go, okay, this is how I'm feeling. You know, either they're there to just listen to you or they're there to give you advice and help. And that's what it is. At the end of it, your relationships just fuel you. They give you life. And being in a healthy relationship is going to give you so much life. And being in an unhealthy relationship is going to sap everything away. So it's all about trying to navigate how to make the right choices for yourself, which is so hard to do.
I know. And on that daunting note, we'll start wrapping up with our rules of the game. So is there one thing you try to live by in relationships?
Is there one thing I'm trying to live in my relationship? Yeah. Keep it fun.
Yeah.
Is that the game? Like, I don't really, what am I, like, what kind of examples?
No, that's a fun twist. We have a podcast all about how dating is a game and maybe it shouldn't be. And the final twist is, have fun.
I mean, like,
fuck everyone, like, have fun. Self-love, baby. Is that the message?
I mean, in terms of my specific relationship, like, my romantic one relationship that in, what I mean is sometimes, you know, life can get very monotonous, and so try and keep it as fun and humorous as you can. Joke around, have a laugh, like, that's what I mean. That's the one thing I live by.
I totally agree, because, like, as much as we're here talking about self-improvement and we're both people that love to work, there's got to be something else. We've got to have times to joke around and be foolish and, you know, connect with that inner child in us that just wants to, like, enjoying being a silly adult. What is all this kind of productivity and self-worth for, if not to, like, also have the space to just be silly sometimes and be ridiculous and have freedom?
I agree.
There you go. One of my last little impromptu speeches on this show.
Oh, emotional.
It's weird. It's very strange. And I would add to this, it feels very much an ongoing theme of this podcast has been questioning expectations. We've talked so much about marriage, we've talked about culture, we've talked about people's timelines on relationships. There's so much that we've kind of picked apart, and I've spoken to so many guests where they've talked about how unhelpful that was and how oftentimes it worked out just fine in its own time and its own way. So that would be my thing, is just question all the expectations, because we all have them, whether it's cultural, whether it's religious, whether it's our parents' relationship and that's a model for us, or they expect us to be on a similar timeline than they were. It's all ridiculous. It's all, like you said, man-made. It's made up. Oftentimes, the people that are telling you about these expectations are also ones that can tell you about a million ways that it didn't work out for them before it did.
I think if we're also talking about relationships in general, like, the number one rule to live by, like, how to take care of relationships, for me, it's just be more compassionate. Like, I try to be as compassionate as I can, because when it comes to, like, we use our relationships, essentially. When I say use, I mean we use them to draw in energy and love and happiness and all of that, right? We turn to our relationships for these essential, amazing experiences and adventures and so on. But at the end of it, everybody is in there own healing journey. They're all in their own experiences and they're all going through stuff. And so the best thing that we can do, whether it comes to trying to break down barriers, whether it comes to trying to strip off the intergenerational trauma that has been affecting you for so many years, whether it's trying to rebuild your relationship with your parents, you come from a completely different generation, different time, different background, just be compassionate. Because at the end of it, when they were parents, they were learning how to parent too, while also trying to, well, they didn't, to be honest with you, we will try, but also, you know, trying to unlearn whatever they'd learned from their parents. But for our parents, they didn't know that what their parents taught them wasn't completely right. When I say that, I mean, like, South Asian parents, where for them, emotions are not really expressed and expectations of achievements are too high and mental health is taboo. And there's just so many things that our parents have, all these values and all these things that they have, that we don't want to take forward for our children. And for them to now unlearn all of this, because we are trying to teach them and we are trying to tell them, okay, look, this was wrong, let's have a conversation. Sometimes it can be very hard and sometimes it can be very frustrating, because from personal experience, parents who come from war-torn countries are not really going to empathize with your mental health issues or your emotionality or whatever trauma you have, because for them, their trauma is just a bit different.
And also, with my mental health hat on, there is often a thing where acknowledging someone else's pain can connect someone to their own. And that is not always something people are ready for.
And I think generally, just to work on your relationships going forward, just compassion, like, just be compassionate. You might not get the apology from your parent. You might not get the apology from that particular person who treated you badly as a child. Whatever it is, you might not get the apology. So just treat yourself with compassion and treat that particular relationship with compassion. If you want them in your life, great. If you don't want anything to do with them anymore, then do what you need to for yourself. Do what you need to maintain your mental health and well-being and so on, and take care of yourself. But I would definitely say that, like, if you are single, enjoy your life, make the most of it. Don't seek love externally, okay? It will happen to you when the love within and around you is just exploding and it's just working for you. So for instance, if you're on a healing journey and you're trying to find yourself and you're learning, you know, ways in which to make yourself happier, go on the walks, do the journaling, read the books, go to therapy, whatever it is that you're doing. As you slowly work on yourself, you will naturally be more absorbent of the love that's around you. You'll receive the love from your family and your friends and your safe space. And maybe you'll even receive love from a partner. But if you think that finding love is what is going to heal you, then that's completely wrong. Love won't heal you. External love won't heal you. It will help you on your healing journey.
Yeah. No, I agree with that we can absorb something that we don't believe in. There's nothing to resonate against it. We've all had those experiences, whether you've been that person or you've been talking to that person, where you tell them they look great or that you love this quality about them, or you think they're definitely going to get that job or whatever it is, and they just cannot see it for themselves. And so it's a wall, and just nothing, however correct you might be, that you say to that person, they're going to receive. And I've been both sides of that wall, and it means the world to tear it down. So yeah, it's there's so much to leave us on here. We've got into a lot. I really appreciate all you've shared. And what was there was one other thing I was gonna say. See, now I'm getting nostalgia. I'm like, I need to say everything in this final episode. I so agree with you, and that's I guess where I'd kind of want to leave things, that we've got to start with us, and part of that is question everything. That doesn't necessarily mean you get rid of all of it. I have my own questions about marriage. Does that mean I'm going to say to people, no, don't get married? No, it's just a me thing, and it's a decision in my life. But, you know, I think there's something really healthy for what you're going to choose to take into your life. And like you say, when you kind of find that alignment, when you find the things that really work for you, things have a tendency to head in the right direction. When you're getting to a point where your self-worth is better, when you know what you want more, then the wrong people, they're not going to last, because you're not going to take their bullshit, or you're going to be able to filter them that quicker and know, like, oh no, they're not ready for a relationship, or oh no, that's, we're not aligned on these things, it won't work. And so over time, the internal stuff, the belief in the life that you could create, will start to match externally. There we go. Final message. Thank you so much for being my guest again. If people want to read the book, where do they go?
Yeah. So the book is called The Path to Self-Love by me, Ruby Dahl. You can grab it everywhere that you can buy your books. There's Amazon, Waterstones, Perry Plus, Indigo Books, Barnes & Noble. Anywhere in the world, the book is available. And from the 11th of June, it's available in the US. From the 13th, it's the UK and the rest of the world. And yeah, you can find me on social media as well. So if you just type Ruby Dahl, it should come up with Dahl Writer. And it's a book that's filled with so much, as we discussed. Like, it's not just, I mean, it is self-love, but it's not just like self-love as a concept.
There's it's
so
not just about how to love you. It's about how to love yourself.
That's it. It's about relationship and boundary setting. And there's just so much, so many tips and tools in that book that I think can help people on their individual journey. And if you're looking for love and you're looking for a relationship, and or you're looking for yourself, you're trying to find yourself, there's so much in the book that I hope helps people on their individual journey.
There we go. Thank you again. And we'll have a catch up in a moment behind the paywall. I want to ask you more about your marriage.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damage by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.